It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard round the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that Trump was still there. I mean,
this is the kind of stuff you dream at night, isn't it?
I mean, seriously. I mean, how, you know, it's fascinating to me, Mark, that that CNN, MSNBC, and the Wall Street Journal, WAPO, all the mainstream media, had to key on the word spying from Barr because it became public. And their audiences are the most uninformed, misinformed people in the world. They never heard this possibility of this before.
Oh, no.
And all of a sudden, the mainstream media is in shock that this got out, or it's getting out. And so they have to just, you know, pillar Barr.
Barr, yeah. Think about Barr. I mean, this guy, we already know what kind of attorney general he is because he's been the attorney general.
It doesn't matter to them.
And now he's turned into a political hack, and Mueller is now, you know, complicit in a cover-up.
Hey, listen, when Assange was publishing stuff that came out of the Pentagon or whatever, the military complex by Chelsea Manning, he was the hero of the left. And now they despise him because they thought he literally single-handedly killed Hillary. They still can't get over the fact that Hillary lost, and now Assange is even responsible for that, they love and hate everybody. It just depends on which side. If you have their narrative and you're talking their language, they love you. If you don't, they hate you. And it can happen. They're so mercurial, it can happen in a second. They can turn on a dime.
You ever get the feeling like Chris Hayes looks under his bed for Russians before he goes to bed at night?
I think Chris Hayes has Russians living under his bed at night. campfires going. They're all, you know.
And then Adam Schiff still saying Russian collusion is so obvious. It's in plain sight. It is right in front of us. Yeah. And the only guy that can't see it is a guy who spent $35 million in 22 months on an investigation. Mm-hmm. He's the only guy in America that can't see it is Mueller.
Well, Mueller went from hero to heel just overnight.
Well, we predicted that on this show, didn't we?
It's true, we did.
That he would turn into an enemy of the deep state, which he is going to be. On today's show.
Oh, go ahead, and you can do that. Now, I want to talk about one other thing before we get going.
Okay, go ahead. It's your show. Go ahead and talk about what you want to talk about.
It's our show, but here's the thing.
I'm just the washed-up game show host sidekick. Come on. At least somebody called me. That's what I told on Twitter.
Elaborate exactly. Why am I washed up? I don't understand. And of course, I had nothing to say. So here's the deal. I lived in Los Angeles for a long time, 45 years, and I had children there. And they had to go to school. So here's the process. And the reason I'm bringing this up is all this stuff that's going on about people, you know, using blatantly misusing the system to get their kids into USC and all these other colleges and paying people off and all that kind of stuff. So here's the deal. In order to get your child into a decent school, because you definitely don't want to be in the public schools of Los Angeles because they're horrible. Now, at one time, they were like among the top 10 in the world. They were so good. Palos Verdes, I think, was number one. But, you know, since Democrats took over, they've completely gone off the rails. So you don't want to put your kids into public school because they're dangerous on top of everything else. So you have to get them into private schools. Now, private school cost for a child in the first grade is as expensive as a college semester. So it's terribly expensive and only a few can afford it. If you're a celebrity, you have a leg up. They'll let you in because they want to say, well, you know, Tom Hanks' children go here. And that always looks good on their resume. But if you're not, here's the process. When your wife is pregnant, you have to go to the Presbyterian Church or some other little church area that has these little preschool schools for babies. And you have to get them enrolled there any way you possibly can, because that's how you matriculate up to a private school.
So you pay off a priest to get your kid in?
Exactly. You got to pay him off and make sure you can do anything to get him in there. And then you have a chance to get into a private school. So these things are very expensive as well. So only a few can afford them, but all celebrities. Well,
I remember what you used to pay for your boys in that school.
Exactly.
That was crazy.
It was insane.
It's like buying them each a car every year.
I had three children in private school at one time, and it was just, you know, it was amazing. So you learn ways to game the system in order to get your kids in there so that they don't have to go to public school. And when this thing came up, I wasn't surprised at all because I know what the hoops you have to go through in California. And this is where this is mostly happening, is out of California and out of Hollywood.
Yeah, USC seems to be have a lot of it there.
Right, well, which is a private school. Right. But anyway, you know, I know what it's going. I don't think any of these people are going to get prison time, or I'll be very surprised if they do. I really will, even though they may or may not deserve it, but I doubt if they will.
Now, just before we get to our guest, I want to remind you, I found out that my favorite lawyer, Michael Avenatti, he's blocked me on Twitter. Did you know that?
Well, I mean, I blocked you a couple of times.
Yeah, I know you have blocked me. But anyways, Michael Avenatti is apparently now facing 330 years in prison.
It's amazing. Brian Stelter is the one who came out and said, you know, you could be the next president on CNN. I mean, this idiot.
Well, that qualifies him as president under the Democratic ticket. I am thinking that even though he's looking at 330 years, he should be out in about 250 years with good behavior.
Boy, I mean, seriously, he's got some serious stuff going on.
He's looking forward to proving his innocence.
He is a bad man.
Well, we're going to talk to a good man. And
yes,
not
we
a
are.
Bad man. We're going to talk to Pete Hegseth. Our audience is really familiar with Pete because they know him as the co-host of Fox and Friends on the Weekend, where you have been on his show before.
I have.
And Pete, welcome to Blunt Force Truth.
Hey, Mark, Chuck, thank you so much for having me. You guys are spot on in those opening comments. I'll steal a line. I don't remember where I heard it. The left would not have standards without double standards.
And that's my line.
That's your line? I stole it from you.
No, not really.
It probably is. Because it's true. I mean, it's their views are fraudulent and self-serving. You're useful to them only to which you're advancing their narrative and their view of the world. Otherwise, they will throw you under the bus. And thank you for talking so much about schools, which I know you both do. It's a disaster what we're doing to the next generation. There's a reason why we get Bernie and Comrade Cortez. It's because kids these days don't know anything about civics or history or why America is special. So I appreciate what you guys do on that.
You know, Pete, I was talking to Mark prior to the show and talking about the educational system. When you think about Hillary Clinton literally prefers Saul Alinsky over Madison, Washington. I mean, she does, and for a reason. That's what she learned in college. And it seems like Chicago is kind of the hotbed of Marxist communists. And I'm just going to say it. I used to say socialist and anything else, but now I've even graduated to Marxist communists because that's what they are.
Well, Bernie's latest rhetoric, Chuck, he's completely skipped over socialism. He's full-on communist now.
Well, they learned this from Cloward and Piven, from Saul Alinsky. Obama was a big Saul Alinsky fan. So naturally, they hate the Constitution because everything Cloward and Piven wrote was to how to overthrow America. And when these people start talking about we want to transform America, that's exactly what they want to do. And I'm not sure the American people are fully aware that they want to transfer or transform us into a basic communist system, which all the power resides in Washington and none of the power resides in people, which is exactly the opposite of our Constitution Bill of Rights.
Absolutely. You guys are absolutely right. And it's they used to not be willing to say socialism because that was a dirty word. But of course, now they embrace it. And you're right. It's a gateway drug to a bigger collectivist view of the world where the elites decide, because you're too dumb to decide for yourself, what the trajectory of your life must be, what is fair, what you can say and can't say, what you can eat, what size your straw can be or what it's made out of, because they went to Ivy League schools and they're smarter than you and they've read all these fancy books that tell them that man can be perfectible. And what our founders understood brilliantly is that every government encroaches and therefore your rights must be endowed by a creator, not to by someone who gives it to you. And we're so far removed from those men that stood on a bridge in 1775 over a couple of taxes and said, we're not going to take this anymore. And now we take it every single day at every turn. And Trump has allowed us and I think taught us to rediscover the spine of our founding impulse and to stand true to it.
The Republican Party would follow his lead.
Well, He's taught them one thing, how to fight. And there's still the weasels out there that won't fight. But if you come out of this era with this president as a leader of our party and the conservative movement, and you don't know how to fight the left, you have not been paying attention.
Well, you know, it's the first time since Reagan, quite frankly, Pete, and I'm sure you know this, that anyone has even been close to being a conservative as we know what a conservative is. Conservative is one of those words that people throw around and they have no idea what they mean. They think they do, but they don't. The left thinks it's, you know, just anarchists. The right uses it as a tool when in fact none of them are very conservative at all. And it's one of those words that's just been kind of word saladed up where nobody kind of knows what kind of dressing to put on it and make it what it what they
exactly.
They, I mean, seriously, it's just a, it's amazing how this word has just been so contorted.
It's very simple. It's a belief in personal freedom and in individual liberty combined with an understanding of the timeless truths of our forefathers and of our faith. So our moral compass is guided not by what government tells us we should do, but instead by what the Bible has laid out and religious traditions have shown and traditions of institutions that have proven to be wise over time. You combine the two and you can allow people to be free. But if you strip away values, then the Leviathan of big government steps in and you're subsistent upon that. So conservatism is that, and Trump understands that combination. He's unleashing free markets and free peoples to make choices, but also with a compass that there is right and wrong, up and down, good and evil in this world.
And the thing of it is, when I was in Hollywood, I always said, Pete, that if Hollywood was for it, I was against it. And I was 98%, 100%.
It made it easy
all the time. The interesting thing about the left is if you look at what they're assaulting all the time, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, you name it, whatever they're assaulting, it's what is anti-American. It's amazing to me that people don't see this, and maybe they are seeing it more and more today.
Well, Chuck, look at what Bernie's saying. I want to ask Pete this. Bernie is now saying that health insurance is a human right.
Well, they've been saying that for a long time, though, Mark. I mean,
where is that in the Constitution?
Well, they don't need the Constitution.
Nowhere. In fact, what I've said is I think that the left is what they've done is they're not attacking the Constitution. They're attempting to embrace it. They wrap everything they do inside the idea that, you know, there's a constitutional right. What they've rejected is the Declaration. And of course, the Declaration and the Constitution, you can't have one without the other. And the Declaration laid out our values, rationale for free people. They reject that.
Pete, this goes back over 100 years. It started with Woodrow Wilson. Yes. Franklin did it. And I mean, it's interesting to me that they're attacking Trump for separating families at the border. Okay. And this is like a big deal. They got children in cages and all this kind of stuff, but they failed to see when FDR took every Japanese American who were loyal Americans and put them in camps in the middle of the country. I mean, they don't even recognize that.
No, of course not. They forget that. And then they just like we'll get to this later, I'm sure. But just like they paper over all of history. In fact, I had an interview for a documentary on Fox Nation about Jerusalem. It's called Battle in the Holy City. Folks can get it on Fox Nation. I interviewed the former mufti of the mufti of Jerusalem, who is also the imam currently of the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount. And we forget, you know, the mufti of Jerusalem was openly allied with Hitler.
Exactly.
It was open. And then we forget that.
Most Arab nations
were.
Yes,
absolutely they were. Absolutely they did. And it's rooted in a deep strand of anti-Semitism and a willingness to shift and just reject and lie about history. That's why the fact that another thing in this documentary is they're doing temple denial. The mufti looked me in the eye and said to me, and we translated it perfectly, King David was never here. Solomon was never here. Jesus never walked and overturned the money tables. There was no temple. Temple was never here. And the documentary exposes all of this. They do the same thing about their civil rights record. They do the same thing about the Civil War, about every aspect that Democrats have been a part of, where they were on the, quote, wrong side of history, which they love to use all the time to bludgeon conservatives. They were there, and then the media covers it up for them, and they move on to some new shiny object that they'll lie to you about.
Well, so what was that foundation for in Jerusalem? The, you know, National Bank?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently, King Herod built it for the mosque that was going to come there 700 years later.
So, yeah. Pete, let me follow with this for a minute. When we look at the left claims that they're the party of rights. They're the party of the LGBTQ community, yada, yada, yada. Why do they keep carrying the water for Islam and embracing it when these are the people who throw gays off the roofs of buildings?
Well, yeah, they're because it's an alliance that's useful for them. They're the party of grievances, right? There's always something wrong with our imperfect system where they need to perfect it even more, and they don't look at the system's ability to adapt, like women's suffrage, like overcoming slavery and overcoming Jim Crow. The system adapted beyond that for the right reasons. They can't understand that. Now, they're so baptized in multiculturalism and diversity and otherism that is identity politics is what defines them. So for them, what they see is marginalized Muslim communities, which of course, this idea that there was a big anti-Islamic backlash in this country after 9/11, which is what AOC and everyone's talking about, is just insane.
Some people did something.
Some people did something. Her tweet this morning compared it to what George Bush said on the rubble pile. This is Ilhan Omar about what George Bush said on the rubble pile. But the thing is, they're so myopic in their focus in what is your skin color? Do you come from a different country? Do you speak a different language? We need to fall over ourselves about that they then happily make accommodations for a very coherent worldview in Islam and the radical forms of it, especially that they say, okay, cover women's heads. Okay, do this. Okay, do that. Okay. And pretty soon you're okaying your way into oppression. And by the end, now, they're the last ones being eaten.
I want to point something out here to you, Pete. You don't know this. Our studios where I'm at is 5 miles from Dearborn.
Okay.
And Dearborn is the largest concentration of Muslims outside of the Middle East. When 9/11 happened, there was nothing happened here. There was no backlash. There was nothing going on in Dearborn. The white community in Detroit didn't do anything bad to the Muslims. In fact, I watched people go out of their way to try to communicate during that time.
Yes.
By the way, my studio is 60 miles from Little Moscow or Moscow on the Little Colorado, which is Austin, Texas. So we're all
you guys are both behind the lines. I grew up 30 minutes from Minneapolis, Ilhan Omar's district. A little Mogadishu is what they call it locally. There was no backlash against Somali Muslims.
Well, they brought in all these Muslims as refugees and everything else.
Correct.
They dominate certain areas. It's exactly what's happening to Europe. I mean, the EU including, has allowed all these Muslims to come in, change the culture, change everything, and they deny the fact that they do it, but that's exactly what's going on. It's what's going on at our border. By the way, you said something that was very interesting. At least I thought it was. You said that our Constitution has allowed us to change and improve and take care of the problems that we have, which we've done. The interesting thing about the Democrat Party is they have no allowances for that. They will never change. They will never accommodate. They will never improve.
Irredeemable.
They just stick with what they have or what they
do. Yeah, and seek to transform and tear down our country. A great example of this is Ilhan Omar. She came as a refugee. Her parents were refugees in a refugee camp for 4 years. Yes, yeah. Somalia, the civil war there. We sent troops there to die as to help the outcome there.
Some of our people died for her.
Of course. Then we were good enough to say, please come to our country, come to Minnesota. Our Lutheran charities and others will give you overwhelming aid. We'll give you jobs. We'll give you welfare benefits. We'll integrate you into our schools. We'll help teach you English. We'll do all of these things because America is a good and welcoming place to people of all backgrounds and all faiths. And we always have been. And then she has the audacity to turn around and say America was not what she expected. It was never good for her. And America was, and then she turns around and sort of makes these statements about, Jews and otherwise. There's a lack of gratitude and recognition of how special America is.
She is pro-Muslim. She is anti-Semitic. There's no question about it. That's exactly what she is. So she's pushing the Islamic point of view, which is completely contrary to our Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's totally contrary to it. And she's doing it under the flag of the Democrat Party, which just allows her to do that because they're the big tent. They allow everybody in, communists, Marxists, socialists.
Now, aren't you grateful that we're on podcast one because they won't throw us off the air for you saying that?
Well, but I will say, listen, she's allowed to be Muslim. This is America. She's allowed to be. But at the same time, we are then allowed to critique the positions that she takes as a result, right, which are blatantly, openly anti-Semitic. And right, frankly, she does fundraisers with CARE. And we all know the background of CARE and the connection to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Most people don't know the background of CARE. That's the problem. They really have no. And this is the thing that Mark and I are up against all the time, and we're trying to improve is educate.
And Pete is too, obviously.
Yeah, and it's try to educate people on not just daily news, but who are these institutions? What do they do? Where do they come from? What are they trying to accomplish? Like CARE, like this family in Chicago. Quite frankly, I have to get Glenn Beck credit. I mean, he did this YouTube video that's up where anybody can watch it, and basically nailed this whole family in Chicago that's behind. They're unknown. Nobody even knows their names. I can't repeat their names because I never heard of them before. They're all in a Methodist church that is totally open borders, and they want to flood America and change the culture, and Soros and all these people are behind them with money, and no one knows who the hell they are. They don't know where it came from. And these things need to be exposed, explored, and talked about. And unfortunately, we're in this 24-hour, you certainly know this, 24-hour news cycle where you just don't have time to get into these things and expose them for what they are, like CARE.
So true. Well, but everyone knows the name of the Kochs, the Koch brothers, right?
Right.
A couple of guys that made a bunch of money, employed hundreds of thousands of Americans, and then fund groups that happen to be patriotic, pro-America. I don't love the Kochs' view on the border. They're actually not good on that.
No, I don't like it either.
No, but they've net they've done amazingly wonderful and great things for this country, yet they are smeared. So podcasts like this are really, really important to spend the time on those groups and talk about those things so people wake up. And I think that's the big service of Trump. I mean, people have woken up to the rigged system across the board. There is no such thing as unbiased journalism. You're not getting it straight ever. And they're all liberals and they're all elites and they all scratch each other's back, and they have the backs of Democrats, and they accost anyone who has the audacity to challenge the system.
Well, I thought the Democrats were the woke, though. Aren't the Democrats the awoken people?
Yeah, right.
Oh, they're woke. You guys are not woke, by the way.
Yeah. No, we're not.
That means, yeah.
You are asleep.
I'm awake.
Absolutely. Pete, we want people to get to know you.
Let's get to, I just want to say this one thing before, and that is the left, journalists on the left, would normally be in support of Assange. He's one of them.
You would think so.
In the past, they've always been that way, but they're certainly not for him now. And I have real mixed feelings about Assange like everybody else. But since he was on, against Hillary, so to speak, they think, then he's the new enemy. But as Mark said, Pete, everybody knows you from the morning show on Fox and Friends, and we appreciate your point of view. And I don't think anyone understands or knows about your history because you're very quiet about it. And I'd like for you to give us a little biography, if you don't mind, about where you came from, how you got to where you are, some of the things you've accomplished in your life. And
this guy's a military hero.
Yeah, toot your own horn. Come on, Pete.
Well, I don't like to, but I will. If Chuck Woolery and Mark Young ask me, I'll do it. I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, and my dad was a high school basketball coach. I went to public school. All I cared about was basketball till the age of 21. And I'm a short, slow white kid, so I had, I was a point guard.
You were not Bob Cousy of the Celtics.
I was not Bob Cousy, but I was good enough. I actually went to Princeton to play basketball. I sat on the bench for 4 years, but when I was there, I ran the conservative publication, and I also did ROTC. So that's how I got into the military. And I went into the National Guard straight out, but that was right after 9/11, of course. We all knew we were going somewhere. And I went first to Guantanamo Bay. I was a guard there for a year when there were about 700 detainees. I was a platoon leader of an outfit out of New Jersey. And then I volunteered and joined the 101st shortly after that, and went to Iraq as a platoon leader and a civil military operations officer for a year in Baghdad and Samarra. And that was right after the bombing of the Golden Mosque in Samarra, if you remember, I woke up to that explosion that morning and, you know, totally changed the war. I came home from that very convinced that we could win the war, but also convinced that the strategy we were using was not successful. We needed more troops and a more of flood the zone, which is exactly what the surge was. So I got involved in a group called Vets for Freedom at a very early stage, became the executive director, and
so
we led the charge on
Capitol.
I was a fan of Petraeus. We stood up for him during the testimony. We followed him and bolstered his claims of success on the ground, which were very real at the time. The strategy was working, even though Harry Reid said the war was lost. And so as this kid with no connections on Capitol Hill, I showed up and ended up doing all these rallies and bringing vets to Capitol Hill and fighting for the surge. And the surge did end up working. Now, unfortunately, Obama gave it all away.
Right.
After that sort of advocacy work, I did a master's at Harvard in public policy. I also deployed to Afghanistan, where I was a senior counterinsurgency instructor in Kabul from 2011 to 2012. And then we came back after that and kind of formed a number of vets groups into something called Concerned Veterans for America, which was a group fighting for reform at the VA. And we're really proud of the work we did there, kind of the precursor to what the president has done, exposing that single-payer government-run system for what it is and fighting to give veterans choice. And throughout all of that, I did a number of hits on TV. I had never done TV before.
How
and
were
one
you
day
making
Fox
a living said, during all this time?
I got paid to run these advocacy groups. So we had to raise money, and I had was able to draw a salary.
Okay.
And also was, you know, it was in the military. So during deployments and all of that. But yeah, it was, for me, it's not about I'm a pass-through company at this point, but all the money that I make, but it's never been about that for me. It doesn't motivate me. What motivates me is fighting for this country in whatever door God opens and opportunities present themselves. So I happened to get a chance to go on Fox. I happened a chance to guest host on the weekend show. That was when Tucker was still there and Clayton.
Right.
And so that was neat. And apparently it went well enough that eventually I landed on the gig on the weekends and get a chance to comment on stuff. Wrote a book called In the Arena, came out in 2016 that I'm pretty proud of. And now with Fox Nation, we're able to do the kind of long form stuff you're talking about. And so I've got a number of projects in the hopper about other specials we're going to do. But listen, this is a great country, and we live in this very consequential moment. I don't think it's special. We always think we live in a special, special time. We've been through tough times in our country, but you know, republics are on average live for 225 and 275 years. We're at 240. And we have a choice, a fundamental choice about the future of our country. And if I get the chance to be a part of the public conversation on Fox and Friends, it's a blessing. And I do it enthusiastically. And I don't know what the next 5 or 10 years will look like, but I hope to be a chance to be a part of fighting on the front lines for the country. So I've been blessed. I've always said I'm a child of privilege because I had two parents that loved me, that taught me about God and that America is a special place. And from there in this country, it's up to you.
You know, it's very interesting, Pete. My partner Mark is very bright. Far more. I'm a mental midget next to him, and I'll admit it. But he's able to adapt to a certain thing in order to get our message across, which I think is so important. And it's so difficult because what we're talking about is a glum, just depressing kind of place like Washington. I mean, it's depressing to live there, I imagine. I've never lived there, but I know I've visited. And Mark has got a great sense of humor. And when you can approach these things that are so devastating with a sense of humor, it really makes a big difference. And I think that's one of the reasons Rush Limbaugh is so popular, because he does it with a sense of humor. And so that's what we try to do, and what we, you know, we're talking about things that are just so dangerous to our future, and it's so hard to find the humor in it. But along the way, there is a lot of humor in this when you think about it.
Yes,
it's so crazy. That
humor is the avenue to truth. I mean, that's why comedians are oftentimes truth tellers, because you can say things. And that's why I love the morning show. It's why I love Fox and Friends. Listen, we have a ton of fun. And there's a book written by Jeffrey Hart. He was a professor at Dartmouth, really smart guy on Western civilization. I read it years ago. It's called Smiling Through the Cultural Catastrophe. And I think that title is very well said. We have to fight every day for the freedoms we have in this country against people who want to tear it away. But there's no reason we have to be angry about it every day. And sometimes you got to laugh. And I believe in the power of mocking. I really do. Trump has perfected this.
Trump is
mockery. He has. Mockery is really important. What you're saying is a sham. You are a joke. Yeah. It's grounded in nothing, and I refuse to accept your premise. And well, I think we can do that with a smile on our face.
One of the things I find very interesting and not very well satisfying is when I talked about my brother being a mental giant and I'm a mental midget, he didn't come to my defense.
I was still talking.
You're right, Chuck.
You're not.
Why would
right.
he?
No, the truth. Actually, the truth.
No.
I got to tell
I'm
you this.
I'm not fishing
though.
For a compliment.
No, so but I got to tell you this though. Chuck is actually one of the wisest people I know. He has this great Lord. Wisdom, and what makes him so interesting, Pete, is he has this great wisdom and great knowledge and a naivety that is almost childlike sometimes.
Yeah, I am naive, I'll admit, but I'd rather be that than cynical, so, you know.
I am too. I'm with you, Chuck, on that, I got to say. It's funny, I learned a lot from Tucker when I hosted the show with him, and Tucker comes from a reporting media background, right? That's why he's so, I mean, his intellect and his ability to understand things is why he's so good, but he once taught me, said, I trust nobody. The first time I meet them, I don't right. trust them, and I don't believe anything they're saying to me. And I came from small town Baptist Minnesota where it was like, oh, I love everybody. Everybody's great. You know, you're great. I'm great. We can be friends. And I've tried to find a middle ground on that without getting cynical to say, you know, maybe they are lying to you. I remember when my dad first told me that everything you read in the newspaper, Pete, is not true. I'm like, really? Are there some things in there that are not? I thought if it was printed, it's true. I think as a country, we're having that giant realization, which is a good thing.
Now, everything on the internet is true, though, Pete, just so you know.
Oh, yes. Especially Twitter. Yes.
So, well, you know, Twitter is this home for liberalism. I mean, it's just
violent,
filled with them and vile, kind of nasty people. And, you know, I'm on there. I've got my little 500,000 people who follow me, and Mark's got his group that follows him. But boy, I mean, I spend all day blocking people because
they're not well thought out comments, Chuck.
People are so angry. They're so angry.
They're angry.
And ad hominem personal attacks is their default. You know, they don't want to have a conversation because they're not the party of ideas. Their ideas are give away free stuff to people. Let's see how that worked out in the past. Not so great.
Same thing. They're great studiers. Did you ever notice this? The Democrats always want to study a problem. They don't want to solve it, but they want to study it forever.
But they will never learn what it is. So there's something that all three of us shared.
Our squishy friends on the right are the same way. Let's form a commission. Yeah, let's get a committee to look at that. Yeah. You know, and it's enough of that already.
And that's why Trump drives him nuts, because he's not a politician. He's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And entrepreneurs, and I am one, entrepreneurs by the very nature see a problem and you just jump in with both feet and you look for a solution and you move on. So there's something that all three of us shared. We all three of us were originally Ted Cruz people, I understand. I believe you were too. And then
I was a Rubio guy first, and then I moved to Cruz very strongly when it was just Cruz and Trump.
And Chuck and I were also in supporting Cruz. And actually, I think the big switch came for you and I, Chuck. You were on Fox and Friends on Saturday, and the president sent a message over and invited us to come over to Trump Tower. And I think that's right. where we made that switch. But Pete, are you shocked as we are, by how unbelievably conservative Donald Trump is? Because Chuck and I didn't see that coming.
I never saw that coming.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not, I won't say I'm shocked. I think I would have said shocked 2 years ago. And the reason is, I think to be a conservative today is to be a patriot. And I think Donald Trump is a patriot and understands the fundamentals of citizenship and a free society. And he's just applying patriotism as he sees it, which today is outright conservatism. And then he also has surrounded himself with really wise advisors who've done the homework and have set it up for him. Look at, you know, setting up, establishing Jerusalem as the capital, moving the embassy there. Look at the Supreme Court justices. And this is a guy who wasn't outright pro-life his entire career, but he understands people that have studied this and he follows their guidance. And in that sense, he's very wise. And you're right. We all had our Trump conversion moment. And mine was, I was watching, I'll never forget it. It was two things happening at the same time. It was when he did a rally down in San Diego, I think it was, in 2016. And there was, the protesters were all waving Mexican flags. And I remember thinking, you know, this is America. And I feel like our allegiance should be to the country that we're in. And if that's not the case, we should really think pretty hard about you know, what we're doing to ensure we continue the promise of America and people are really invested in it. And then the other one was a press conference that Rush Limbaugh called, you know, the press conference Republicans have been waiting for years. And he just stood on the podium and he looked at these reporters. He's like, "You're dumb. You're an idiot. That's ridiculous. Get out of here." He just scolded. And I'd love to roll tape back on that. I remember looking at that thing. That's it. These guys are all weasels and we play their weasel game and he's not going to play it. He's got a chance to do it. And once that light bulb goes off that this is not a, because I wanted the conservative litigation of Obama. I wanted silver tongued Rubio or Cruz to just talk Constitution and to deliver, you know, the core values of what we stand for. And this was a break glass in case of war election. This was not about that. This was blunt instrument needed, course correction completely. And that's what Trump represented. God bless the folks that saw that out the gate. It just took the rest of us a little bit more time.
And that's why we came up with blunt force truth. It was a lot of that had to do with Trump, because it is, the truth is just blunt force sometimes. The other thing is that Trump, you know, became, well, let me put it this way. The Democrats are constantly projecting everything they are onto Republicans. They project racism. They project bigotry. They project everything. It's who they really are. And I'm not sure the American people can see this, but when it comes to Trump, they are convinced that Trump is in it for himself. He's not in it for America, because that's who they are. They're in it for self-promotion, self-preservation, for power. And he's not in it for that at all. So he has to be like them. And so they
project. He must have our motive. Yes, because he's a billionaire from New York City. It must be all about personal enrichment, which they still go back to all the time. Yeah. It's not an understanding that he's been saying this stuff for 80, 90 years. That clip that is always goes around with him on Oprah, where he says, "Well, if it gets bad enough, I would step up and do it because I love this country." Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened. And thank God he did it.
And they just can't figure that out at all, which is
no, they never will. You know, I cannot wait.
Because I'm glad they can't figure him out.
Me too. Yeah. I'm glad we've got Comrade Cortez. I'm glad we've got, you know, Ilhan Omar. I'm glad we got Bernie. Just let him keep talking, because when he wins 40 plus states in 2020 and they wake up the next day in a pool of their own tears, they still won't understand what happened. I just saw the news. He has totally changed. I just saw the news. Nigel Farage is running in the UK because they haven't figured out how to Brexit. Good. I mean, this is just the beginning of the people saying our governments are deceiving us. We got to step up. So this movement is, everyone wants to say it will fizzle. Now it's only growing.
So Kamala Harris put out a tweet saying that.
Describe who she is, because our audience probably won't know who Kamala Harris is.
Kamala Harris is one of the candidates for president. She's a senator from California. Mm-hmm. And she put out a tweet saying that when she's elected president, she's going to fix the income disparity that is between black teachers and white teachers, because black teachers make $2,600 a year less than white teachers. Now, I commented to her, and she actually tried to back it up. Because my comment to her was, since the teachers union negotiates all the unions, all the contracts, you have just shouted out the fact that the teachers union must be racist, because they obviously are not. They obviously are not negotiating the same contract for the black members as the white members. But where I'm going with this is, she's making education one of her topics. Where do you see the education system in America going right now?
Oh, let's have that conversation. Please make it about education. Where do I see it?
Well, start with Maxine Waters not knowing that the government's actually supporting.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean,
this is
listen, the government
the
school.
Banking or whatever the committee is.
What are you going to do about student loans? We don't make student loans, Congress.
Oh, my goodness. That was unbelievable. Listen, you guys are talking about it.
It was revealing.
Of course, let them keep talking. That's exactly my point. You guys were talking about it before. I mean, the government schools in our country are indoctrination camps. And you know what? We used to think it was higher education. It's not. Because of the federalization of education, because of the unions, because of the Democrats, it's now social justice agenda, anti-American agenda in our high schools and our middle schools, even down all the way down into elementary school on the gender stuff, on the sexuality stuff. They're trying to create a pipeline of future voters. Based on an agenda of indoctrination and social justice. And if you think your kids go to a, remember the axiom, everyone hates Congress, but they like their local congressman? It's right. The same thing with public schools. Everyone says, oh, the public schools are so bad, but my school's good. You know, we got nice. So your school is infected too. Do you even know if your school says the Pledge of Allegiance every day? Most public schools don't anymore. Do you know what your school teaches on Common Core? I've seen the second grade Common Core math. It's lunacy. I have a kid who's in a public school, unfortunately for now, and it's insane. And the types of things, I mean, Earth Day is a national holiday. You think it's the biggest holiday of the year. You can barely get them to celebrate President's Day or Vets Day or any of the stuff that's foundational to our country, let alone learn about the Constitution and basic civics. Listen, our public schools are really a huge threat to the future of our nation. If they want to have that conversation, Trump will have it. And he'll be right at the pulse of where Americans are. And it's unfortunately the most disadvantaged who are the most trapped in that system because we don't have school choice. They're not able to go elsewhere. Our public schools are not what they should be. They can't go to private school like you talked about. So they're the ones that deal with the ramifications of this system. That's what's unfair. Yet instead they point to, you know, teacher pay and say that somehow there's this hidden racism amongst all Democrats who control all these inner city schools, and they underpay minority teachers. It's a shell game. So any conversation they want to have, from the border to abortion to education, they will lose. And Trump will have it in a full-throated way, which is great.
As parents, my daughter, so we live in an affluent community with the top-rated schools in the state. And I found my daughter coming home with schoolwork that I would have to sit down and I would just have to correct what she was being told. I would have to sit down and say, no, this is not what happened in history. No, this is not what the Constitution says. She had a teacher that told her that America ceased to be a republic and became a pure democracy once we ratified an amendment to allow 18-year-olds to vote. This is what they were teaching in her high school.
What in the world? Yeah, no, listen, it's those schools that are often the worst. It's those schools that are often the worst. I have the same scenario. The property taxes are obscene where I live in New Jersey. The public school there is known for being a great public school. That's why everyone wants to send their kids there. And then you realize you go to the Christmas program or the holiday program for second graders, and the word Christmas is never said, not once, except during Feliz Navidad. Mm-hmm. It's not... I mean, you can say it in Spanish, but not in English. You can say it in Spanish, but not in English.
Now, check this out. That teacher said to me, well, you must not have went to school here. And I looked at him and said, no, I'm not an idiot. That's why I don't believe this. But I actually went in and fought with the teacher. And my point is, folks, and tell us what you think, Pete. As parents, if you have children in school, you need to pore over what they're reading.
You
need to go over this stuff and tell these kids, no, this is not what is reality. This is not right.
Everything, parents, grandparents, where are your kids going to school? Who are they teachers? Who are their teachers? What are they bringing home? And if they're in a public school, a big part of your job is going to be deprogramming what they think they learned at school. Exactly. Otherwise, you will get futures of Cortez and others pumping out of the system.
Coming right out of the tube.
You do. And that's what they want. That is exactly what they want. That's why it's either your options these days. Three of my kids go to a Christian classical school. It's either Christian classical education, some form of private education, but a lot of these private institutions are no better. Right. Unfortunately,
some are worse.
Or you got to homeschool your kids, or you got to find other avenues through which they get these values, because they're not. It used to be that you absorbed American patriotism through our public institutions, which even if there was a left or a right, they were largely osmosis of the. That's all gone. It has to be intentionally done, or our kids will not know our past and our history.
I can remember growing up. I mean, of course, this is a long time ago, but when I was in grade school and high school, there were three things in the classroom that are not there anymore.
Was that like a one-room schoolhouse,
no,
Chuck?
No.
All right, I'm just
that
checking.
Long ago.
All right.
But there was a picture of Washington, there was a picture of Lincoln, and there was a flag.
And Lincoln was currently the president at that time.
Every single Oh, man. Oh, this is, I mean, you know, you get close to 80, and all of a sudden, you know.
All right, carry on.
It's all out the window.
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. Those are all gone. In fact, instead, when they teach the history of the founding of our nation, there's a big emphasis on what a scourge slavery was and how bad these slave owners were. Mm-hmm. And that's what they focus on, as opposed to an understandable.
Everything's bad.
That's a predicate for everything is bad. Right. Correct. Absolutely. And therefore America was never great. I mean, that's what we're going to have. The 2020 election will come down to make America great again, or keep America great, versus America was never great. We are litigating America. Forget about marginal tax rates and Medicare for all. Those are all vehicles by which they deconstruct the exceptionalism of America, because they can point to sins. He who casts the first, who is without sin, please first cast the first stone. That's part of what I love about Tucker's show. He always calls out the hypocrisy of the moral outrage of the left when they're always guilty of the same things or worse, but they cover up for each other.
Right. Well, I remember when, I've known Geraldo since the 60s. We kind of started at the same time. And he and I are friends. I don't agree with most of the things he says, but he was talking about Clinton, and this was a family thing, this whole, you know, immorality with Clinton and what he'd done in the White House. He was fighting for that. It's personal. It has nothing to do with the nation and all this kind of stuff. And yet at the same time, when you turn around and lay it on Trump, it's national. It's not personal anymore. Switch. I mean, they switch it up all the time and claim moral superiority. And it's just a joke. It really is. It's a joke. But, you know,
it's a joke. And it's our job to get the biggest megaphone we can to the most people as often as possible and speak truth. If in this era of Trump, if you're not able to speak truth without mincing words, you are missing your moment. There's a gigantic shield. We don't understand how much he's emboldened patriots, to be honest. But to the left, that makes me a white nationalist or a racist or a sexist or a homophobe. I say throw whatever label you want at me. They're all garbage. They're all not true. It's how you put me in a box to try to silence me. And I will refuse to live in your game. And you guys do that on this podcast. I do the best I can on Fox and Friends. And thankfully, we have a president that punches back better than they can ever punch.
You know, it's interesting. If you go back 70 years, you know, as old as I am, there were people who were writing about the future of this country and the future of our democracy and warning about all the things that are literally happening today. I mean, 1984 was all about that. I would suggest and try to get people to please read Cloward and Piven. Please read Saul Alinsky. Please understand that these are heroes of the left. And if you can read them and understand what's going on, you will understand what's going on today and what transforming America is all about. It's transforming America into something that is totally un-American. And I don't know whether people will do that or not, but I guarantee you if they do, they will be well armed.
I've read Rules for Radicals about Saul Alinsky. It's a must read to understand them. They try to isolate individuals and then impugn their character, discredit them, and destroy them. And that's how they continue to advance in their cause. And our job is to not let those things work and to fight. It's the only antidote is to understand their approach and combat them.
You're a military guy. You've got to identify the enemy. You have to identify them, know who they are before you can actually effectively fight them.
Yes, you have to isolate them, and then you can close with and destroy the enemy. But until you know and study what they do, you're a sitting duck. And most Americans have assumed that patriotism is the norm, or love of, you know, free markets is the norm, or individual freedom, limited government, they just assumed it.
They think that the Democratic, you know, and I don't lump all Democrats together, but I'm going to say the Democratic leadership, Democrats in Congress, I think most people think the Republicans and the Democrats are all American and they all love the country, but they have a different way of getting there. No, these people do not love this country.
Yes, I agree with you. It's unfortunate that we have come to that point. John F. Kennedy today would be a conservative Republican. I mean, there was a different strand of love of country that came from our founders all the way through the greatest generation and continues with a great. I mean, the reason Trump will get reelected is because that reservoir of patriotism still runs deep. We've lost the culture. We've lost Hollywood. We've lost our educational institutions up and down. We've lost all of news except for Fox podcasts and talk radio. Yet we're winning elections. My big fear, the big question is Trump a leading indicator? Is he an indication of an ability for our country to be renewed, or right. is he the last gasp of the political quarter? I think that is an open question, but right now it's strong enough, and the left is so rabid that we will live to fight another day. You've just reminded me, I need to reread 1984. It's been a while since I've read that. Yeah. I feel like we're living through that right now.
We are literally living through that. But I tell you another interesting point, and that is, if you go back 100 years to Woodrow Wilson and then follow it with FDR and people like that, we think that today, because of Trump and what's happening with this soft coup, that it's the first time it ever happened. It's not the first time the IRS and the industrial complex of the deep state has been used against an opponent. It's been happening for a long time. Woodrow Wilson did it. FDR did it. There was a guy named Mellon, the Mellon Banks. FDR hated this guy, and no one really knows why, but he went after him with a vengeance through the IRS. He used the IRS to go after him, and they both had several things in common. Woodrow Wilson wanted to stack the Supreme Court. He wanted to get rid of the Bill of Rights. He wanted to change the Constitution. FDR went through the same thing, and people just don't know this stuff. It's been around.
No, they don't.
Democrats and some Republicans have been doing this for a long time, weaponizing the government against their opponents.
Absolutely. These threats are not new, as you said. I mean, there's a reason Eisenhower put "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance. It's because we had a problem with communists, and we knew communists were godless, and we knew we needed to fortify.
He also had a little thing called Operation Wetback. You remember that?
Yes.
He cleaned out every illegal in this country, and he did it within a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, legality and citizenship has to matter, and that's something the left, you know, their mantra of no person is illegal is what they believe, and as a result, our borders should be wide open, and we should become a melting pot of whatever other ideas that have worked so well around the world. But here, one of the things we were going to talk about is Convention of States, an Article 5 convention, which is something I'm very passionate about, which is a movement happening. Yeah, Mark Levin and you guys and Hannity and anybody, the best law professor, great conservative, Robbie George out of Princeton, who's a mentor of mine, he's on board. I mean, this is something our founders gave us. It was the last day of the convention, and they slipped in this into Article 5. If the federal government ever gets so big and unwieldy and so oppressive that the people have a recourse. You got Article 5. The people have a recourse to go to their state legislatures and pass a resolution. And if 3/4 of the states pass it, you have a amending convention. This is not a brand new constitutional convention to rewrite the Constitution. That's not what we're talking about. Very specific parameters that an amending convention could do to limit this proposal in the current Convention of States, Article 5, is to limit the size and scope of government, to look at term limits, not just members of Congress, but also within the deep state and the bureaucracy. Because if you just limit members of Congress, then the deep state gets even more powerful because they stick around while everyone else rotates in. And then it's size and scope of government thing. And balanced budget amendment, Washington lives by its means. This is the type of thing I'm throwing my full support behind, because we need a moment like that. We need to get to the point where the people take the power back. Can you imagine how much Washington and the media would freak out if a convention was formed because Washington can't figure it out? And I think the reason why the movement is going a little bit more slowly for a convention of states is because people feel like Trump's got their back. The Republic is being defended. But let's say that, you know, in 2024, that's not the case.
Right. This would be the time.
We're going
to
need a recourse to stop the encroachment of the federal government. So 14 states have passed it. If you haven't checked it out, just Google Convention of States. It's worth looking at. And I think it's a place where real patriots should put a lot of support behind.
And we need how many states, Pete?
You need 34, I believe. I believe it's 34. Yeah, so we're still
like 17, something like that.
We're at 14, but it's 14 have been passed, but in a dozen or so or more states, it's passed one house of either the House or the Senate in that state. And you don't need a governor's signature because it's a resolution. So you just have to get, and then there's plenty of safeguards. So let's say you go to a constitutional convention, then whatever's passed there has to be re-ratified back in the states. And this is a very high bar, but let's have that national conversation that our founders gave us. And of course, the left hates it. Every single left-wing group has come out against this. Hillary Clinton has spoken about it after she lost the election. They see this as a threat. It would unwind the welfare state established by FDR effectively, what they've done for 90 years. This is big of a bullet, metaphorically, as we have in our chamber.
I think
folks need to learn more about it. What?
Has Michigan passed this?
I don't know if Michigan has. I believe there's been committee debates about it. I don't know how far it is. You should check it out. What's great about this movement is, if you want to save your country, go lobby your state rep or your state legislature, which everyone can do. Everyone mm-hmm. can get motivated around. It's a perfect movement because you've got local action with national consequence to save the country. So if folks don't know about it, check it out. Conventionofstates.com.
I believe a legislature that Texas really probably it. Has.
Texas, I believe, has. Yeah. My home state of Minnesota has not, but I've been very involved there. It's state by state. And there are people out there on the right, Phyllis Schlafly types and others, former Birchers, who are saying, oh, this will blow open the Constitution and it'll be a runaway convention.
Mark,
that's not what it is.
For the longest time. You live up to it, Mark. You did, didn't you? You
What's
were
that?
At the Convention of States. I remember you talking.
I was against an open convention.
Right.
Yeah, this is not an open convention at all. Very limited in the parameters. States can recall their delegates if they don't like what they're doing or what's being talked about. There's a lot of safeguards here. I would never be for an open convention, but my goodness, I think our founders would look at our moment right now and say, if you guys can't stand up and do something big, right, then you don't deserve the republic we gave you.
Yeah, Michigan has not passed it, but we have a legislature here that I think would, and I'm going to get involved in that one, Chuck. So I may call on your help to.
You know, we're about out of time. Pete, I got to ask you one thing, because you're in the news, you're on the news all the time. You're surrounded by news people at Fox. And I'm really curious about this, because every conservative on Twitter that I talk with, every conservative off Twitter that I talk with, we have one thing that sounds like a drumbeat that everybody's kind of sick of. But I find it so interesting, because the left is so good at wordsmithing. And one of the things that I find interesting, I don't like it, but I find it interesting, and everybody on Fox uses this term, and I'm wondering why they default to it, and that is democracy over republic. Why don't we talk about our republic instead of framing it as a democracy? Because it is.
I never say democracy. You're totally right. We should never use that word. That's not what we are.
I love Tucker like you do, but he says it over and over again. And so many people on Fox do say it over again. They don't use the word republic. And I wonder why they default to democracy.
I would guess with a guy like Tucker, it's habit. I'll mention something to him about it. You know, something someone
we
said to me
get
at
out
a diner.
Of that habit. Because that's
no, it's true. But think about it. We all have our own habits. So 3 years ago, someone came up to me at a Fox and Friends diner 2 or 3 years ago and said, why do you use the word mainstream media? There's nothing mainstream about them. Yeah. And I've stopped using it. I will never use it ever again. They're not mainstream. That only puts us down. So what, we're the fringe guys? No. They're not mainstream at all. They're the left-wing media. They're the legacy media. They're whatever you want to call them. But don't call them mainstream. I think we have to be very intentional about our words, to your point. I agree. I'm gonna start watchdogging.
Well, on top of that, I must say that most people have no idea what the distinction between a democracy and a republic is. They really don't know what it is. And let's just encapsulate it in the simplest form, which is the Electoral College. I mean, states are democracies. Senators are elected by democracy since they killed the 17th Amendment. Thank you, Woodrow Wilson. And all Congress are, it's a democracy. So it's very confusing. It almost gets to the place where you have to explain the difference between small d democracy and a large R republic. And I would rather default to republic than small d democracy.
I agree. You know, now it all makes sense. Full circle. No wonder the Democrat Party's a sham. Their name is a sham.
Exactly.
Democracy is their name.
But look what they want.
I hadn't thought about that before.
They literally want a democracy.
Well, calling someone a Democrat was a pejorative pre Andrew Jackson. That was a way to insult someone.
Yeah. Listen, and they hate federalism, too. They hate the idea of federalism, of states having control, which is also an aspect of a republic.
Somebody's going to turn to someone and say, why do you say republic instead of democracy? And then you'll have to explain it.
I want to hit Pete with one more question before we let him go.
Sure.
So are the wonderful former congressman losing to the Senate, Beto O'Rourke? I can't but call him Beto O'Rourke.
His groupies will be beta males.
Yep. Exactly. He is a beta male. And I got to tell you this. I got a woman sent me a direct message and she said, I can't say this publicly, but I work at a public library and Beta O'Rourke, or she said Beta O'Rourke, came to our library and he kept standing on our furniture and we couldn't get him off of our furniture. And it was so rude that we were trying to get him off the front counter. And I've noticed that he jumps on everybody's furniture.
But you know what? That shtick is getting so thin. He's plummeting in the polls because people are not looking for a bro candidate. He's an empty suit.
So here's what I think is hysterical, and this is why I bring this up to you. Beta, which I always say, when you look at that Robert Francis O'Rourke, he sounds like Central Planning just sent him down to play the priest in Going My Way. But anyways, he's now saying that he's the candidate of the VA.
Oh, goodness. Oh, garbage. I don't even know if he was on the VA committee. Maybe he was. But if he's going to be the candidate of the VA, he's going to be the candidate of the VA the same way Bernie Sanders was. He's the former chairman of the Senate VA committee. And all Bernie ever wanted was more money. That's it. And he fought every single reform. Fire employees at the VA, he fought it. Give veterans choice, he fought it. So everyone will jump up and down and say they're for the vets. But that ruse is over, too. We funded that thing to the tilt, even with – and there are 7 million vets that use the VA. We spend $180 billion on that department. It's the second largest department in the federal government. They have 400,000 employees. They're twice the size of the Marine Corps. Yet that 7 million vets cannot get timely or quality service. And you know what, even more? 75% of vets that use – or of the vets that use the VA, they get 75% of their health care elsewhere. They go somewhere else for the private care that they can get, and then they use the VA when they have to. And you find me one 9/11 vet that wouldn't like the choice, I'd like to talk to them. It's an institution. It's a generational thing. I mean, a lot of Vietnam vets, they came home and they were spat on, and they found one place, and it was the VA, where they felt safe, where they felt they could be together. And the ethos of that generation is much more pro the older institutional VA, but now they're seeing how much they like choice when they get it. It is a classic single payer argument to prop up the VA, and the failures of the VA are a preview of what the Democrats want to do to every single one of us. It's government run healthcare.
I'm going to get accused of having a tinfoil hat on here. It's not the first time, but Beta is claiming that his way to fix the VA is that he wants to have mental assessments done on every person that comes in. And to me, I'm suspicious of anybody who thinks that the thing you need to do is to do a mental assessment on me when I walk in.
What a proliferation of the stigmas that we're trying to avoid of every vet, that I'm a ticking time bomb and a broken vessel who can't think for myself and make decisions that are best for me. They can't even do the mental health assessments they're doing right now. And they give guys a bag full of pills and get them addicted to opioids. I mean, that is an absurd way of looking at it. And, ultimately, you know what that goes to? Well, you're not mentally unfit to own a gun. That's exactly where it goes.
Yep.
Yes. I got my tinfoil hat on too.
So, is anybody ever going to do a background check on Buttigieg or whatever his last name is?
Buttigieg.
Is anybody taking the time to do a background check on his parents and who they were?
Well, you can't do that because he's gay, so you're not allowed to do a background check.
Well, I mean, his father was a Marxist professor at Notre Dame. I mean, let's be honest. That's exactly what he
was. I mean, this guy cuts against the grain enough that he is the flavor of the month, and maybe he'll catch on a little bit of steam. I don't know. But the field is so vapid. You know, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, so
all
boring and vapid.
When it comes, running, I mean,
Robert Francis, all these guys. That a guy like Pete Buttigieg, who can string a sentence together, rockets in the polls. I still think, though, guys, if you want to take this bet, I'll give you the field. Give me Bernie Sanders. Any amount of money you want to bet, I'll take that bet. Because I think Bernie's going to be the nominee.
I mean, right now, the Democratic field looks like the cast of Blazing Saddles. I mean, it's... I mean, they're all just lunatics.
There are five...
Blazing Saddles? That was awesome.
Oh, my goodness. There's five boxes you got to check to be a Democrat. It's the gender box, male or female, the gender box, the
gender
the
box is one
box.
Of 78 genders, so you got a lot of choice.
Yep, there you go. Start wherever you want. The ethnicity box, the how much do you hate Trump box, how progressive are you box, and the authenticity box. And I think authenticity is a big one. That's why Bernie's where he is. People think he's authentic, even though we all know the real story. And a guy like Mayor Pete checks that box pretty well, too. So,
Here's another word, Pete, that I think that the mainstream, not mainstream, but Fox and right wing, whatever you want to call it. I don't think they're right wing, but anyway, media like Fox and other media, even like us, don't really explain.
Patriotic media.
And that's the word progressive. Most people have no clue where the origin of progressive is, who Hegel is, who Engels and Marx are, who the guy from Italy, I can't think of his name, Giovanni Gentile, who nobody even knows about, the father of fascism. No one really connects the dots on all this and says, these are progressives. These are who these are who they want us to be. And it is totally, you know, progressivism is the mother to socialism, communism, fascism. Everything on the left that they project on the right is what a progressive is. And by the way, all these people we call rhinos in the Republican Party were really old Teddy Roosevelt progressives.
I'm a big Teddy Roosevelt fan for a lot of his basic ethos. Sure. But if you understand what Teddy Roosevelt also did, you understand he was the beginning of the growth of progressivism, of the government bureaucracy. I mean, this guy gave us a lot of problems.
Yeah. And I really think people – I just think you have to understand history in order to know where you're going and what you're up against and what you're looking
and,
at and what people are claiming they are. I mean,
and uncover the ruse of the moment.
They were all progressive until Calvin Coolidge came along, and then they had to change their name to liberal, which they completely distorted and ruined that word. So, I mean, it's really important to know this stuff, don't you think?
It's everything. And that's why their focus on the schools and Common Core and is so fundamental to them. They have to perpetuate the lie or perpetuate the deception of the goodness of their ideas. That's why they hate Twitter. That's why they hate Trump.
This whole
Trump blows it open.
This whole Marxist movement on the left came out and was birthed in progressivism from over 100 years ago. It's nothing new. It's just out where people, you know, it's out in front of you, but people don't really understand it. And that's my problem. If you understand it, you can deal with it. If you don't understand it, then you can be subject to be swayed by it.
Amen.
Well, Pete Hegseth, Chuck, this is the most fun interview.
What a great interview, Pete. You're just
wasn't as fun.
You really are.
Well, no, you guys are great. Thank you. And you guys gotta come back to the show soon. I'm gonna talk to the producers.
Okay.
Anytime. But
it's always fun being on the couch with you guys. It really is.
It has been so fun having Pete on. Pete Hegseth's Weekend Fox and Friends, which is, by the way, not that there's anything wrong with the weekday Fox and Friends, but the Weekend Fox and Friends is the only one I actually watch.
Oh, man. Well, I will not tell Brian or Steve or Ainsley, but we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. It's been awesome. If you enjoyed the show, you know, don't forget to leave us a great review, a 5-star review over on iTunes. And, of course, you can now get Blunt Force Truth on the Podcast One app. So don't forget to get us there.
My friend Norm Mattis.
Chuck, take us home.
Hey, listen, Pete, want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. We really enjoyed
it.
Our audience will enjoy it. And look forward to seeing you again, my friend.
Likewise. Thank you both.
All right. We'll see you.